Dale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line. Dr. Yazbek. And Dr. Yazbek, a retired pediatrician. And we're going to be talking this evening about autism and about Dr. Wakefield and about some of the fascinating information that has shown up tying in the utilization of MMR vaccine to the skyrocketing incidence of autism. Now, let me point out that there are probably several causes of autism. Probably one is genetic. Probably one is MMR vaccine. Probably one is the aluminum and mercury in the vaccines, because we do know that the incidence of autism has increased from about 1 in 10,000 to about 1 in 160 children in America. And, of course, over to above the incidence of autism, we have the incidence of attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and then a large number of children who have learning disabilities, to the point where today it's estimated that 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, unlike anything seen anywhere in the world, and nothing seen like this until very recently in America. With that as a background, Dr. Yazbek, thanks so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan, with your audience.
Well, why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about you? I know about you because we've talked many times, but your background and how you became interested in this subject.
Well, I trained in infectious diseases, then did some growth and development at Brown University, and then decided to go and practice. And practiced for 34 years. Was a school physician in northern Rhode Island, and had a big practice. Definitely pro-vaccine, administered all my own vaccines, made sure as a school physician that all my children were vaccinated and had followed all the mandates. So, definitely, we are pro-vaccine, and we obviously have become, as we get older, pro-reasonable vaccination, as we see all kind of really innumerable vaccines being added day after day, many being given together, many having for years since the 30s contained a preservative of all things made of 49% mercury. These things, it's only lately when we were able to think for ourselves. You know, when you are in practice and you're fed all this information through meetings, you kind of believe what you're told. You get all the journals kind of follow the same trend. They tell you the same things. Everything is wonderful. And it's only when you start to think and start and have the time to read and really go in depth into these problems that you start to see that maybe we're not doing the right thing. And maybe we're not doing the right thing for kids to be vaccinating them so often, so much, particularly for diseases that are not there, or to give them non-existing protection. I mean, when you think, for example, of the hepatitis B vaccine that was introduced for all children starting at birth in 1991, well, first, that the vaccine does not work, would not be working, would not be efficacious, would not be effective when the child is at the age where he's going to be having risky behavior. So we're giving him a potentially dangerous vaccine that is not going to work. We're giving it to him on the basis that maybe he needs it. Well,
hold on. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Yazbek right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening. Dr. Yaz back. He's retired now from practice, but he's not retired from medicine. He's doing what I'm doing, and that he's doing a lot of studying. Of course, he has the ability to focus in on one issue, or, you know, a very, very important issue. I don't. I simply have to learn from people who are doing the research. But what Dr. Yazbek says is so true. I remember when I was taking my general practice residency, 50 or so years ago, 1955, I was a general practice resident, and one of my mentors said to me, you know, doctors are like sheep. One sheep goes one way and all the other sheep follow, and then, of course, another sheep goes another way and all the sheep follow. And I don't mean to degrade doctors, because they're wonderful people and they're very, very smart people. But sometimes, you know, they do not have the time to do the research on these issues that you do when you don't have to worry about running a practice and seeing a lot of patients. And sometimes you can then begin to see things much more clearly, and especially when we find that certain very courageous doctors, and we'll be talking about some of this evening, have come up with some very, very solid scientific evaluations as the cause of autism, and they've been attacked and demonized by a medical establishment that, for whatever reason, seems to have certain specific views, and of course, they're the ones who are feeding the information to the average doctor, not people like Dr. Yazbek and myself, who are trying to say, hey, let's look and see. 1 in 6 American children, according to the CDC, has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. Why is that? Why is the incidence of juvenile diabetes skyrocketing? Why is the incidence of juvenile asthma skyrocketing? Why is the incidence of juvenile allergic reactions skyrocketing? And nobody wants to ask those questions, because everybody knows that all vaccines are good. So with that as a background, Dr. Yazbek, why don't you go ahead and pick up there?
Well, you know, you picked up on something on your introduction. It was interesting. You mentioned ADD and other developmental problems and behavioral problems. I was just in contact today, as a matter of fact, with a Russian colleague, MD, PhD, and who actually has a website and information website, and has several of my articles, you know, translated and published in Russian. And I asked him if I could get numbers and statistics on the incidence of autism in certain areas of Russia to compare them. I said, you know, over here we just group everything together. We don't really, I mean, there are many areas we could not give you an exact number of cases of autism, for example, because they all need help, and therefore they're all neurodevelopmental.
Hold that thought right there as we bring our stations back online. Well, Dr. Yazbek has been talking about being in contact with a physician in Russia, MD, PhD, and of course he was asking about the various types of subdivisions, as we call it here, certainly autism, and then we have other diseases, and certainly we talk about ADD and ADHD, and these children who have real problems. Now, what actually is happening in Russia? Are they seeing an explosion in the incidence of these neurodevelopmental abnormalities?
I don't have that information yet, but it's going to be difficult to compare ourselves with Russia because of the fact that we don't have the same criteria in diagnosis, and I think this can lead us into the story is that as you know, we talked about studies from Denmark and Finland talking about the for example the autoimmune causes of autism, and whether the MMR vaccine in particular has any place in the causes in the causing of autism in people who are already predisposed genetically, and we can't compare many of those countries with us. Our vaccination practices are different. Our immune system is different. We start our vaccines are different. For example, that study from Denmark that has become very famous, and which, as you know, we have shut down very conclusively. The study from Denmark compared children who had never been exposed to mercury since 1991, while our children were exposed to 187.5 micrograms of mercury in the first 6 months of life.
And, of course, what happened over in Denmark, they stopped giving the mercury in the vaccines, didn't they, in the early 90s?
in 1991.
Right. They're a lot smarter than we are, because we kept it up until, I think, about 2002. And during this time, of course, we were seeing the skyrocketing results. Why did the people over in Belgium, in Denmark, stop putting the mercury? Why did they take it out of their vaccines, you know, almost 12 years before we did?
Well, as you know, there has just been released a very important memo from Maurice Hellermann at Merck talking about that in 1991. This is a 1991 memo, and it's available on the SafeMind website. It's www.safeminds.org. And that memo shows that even here we were aware that there was a problem in 1991, but we didn't do anything about it here. All what we were concerned is about making the right vaccines without mercury to sell to the people in Scandinavia, while our own children were getting vaccines with mercury.
No, you mean we manufactured the vaccines without mercury here in the United States, and then we sent, we manufactured them with mercury here, and we manufactured them without mercury to send to other countries?
Well, that's what the memo says. If you read the memo, and you should read it yourself, and it's right. It was just brought up maybe a month and a half ago.
Yes, I remember when that came out.
In a court case. And in it, clearly, they wanted to make sure that they could find a way to produce quickly vaccines to sell to Scandinavia that did not contain the mercury, because at the time they did not want to use it. So we were aware of it, and now we keep on denying it. Now, as of today, I went on the CDC website, and they said that mercury in vaccine at most causes a little bit of redness at the site of injection.
Well, that's amazing, because, of course,
this is today. I mean,
they actually, when I first went into practice, why we had mercurochrome and methylate, they took those off the market, you know, almost 50 years ago, because they realized the toxicity. They used, of course, to paint the umbilical cord and newborn children with mercury, and with methylate, they discontinued that. So they've known for many years how terribly, terribly toxic is.
I mean, the two things that we were always told, that they put the mercury, they put the thimerosal in the multi-dose vials, because we are so stupid as doctors and nurses that we cannot really use a vial, you know, penetrate a vial two or three times without infecting it. Therefore, they put a little mercury to kill the germs. Well, obviously, it doesn't make sense. First, is because we don't contaminate vials. We're very careful. They put the mercury because they want to make sure that it's not contaminated in the factory before it comes out. But the fact is, as you know, Rogam, used by obstetricians for years, Rogam is a unidose, comes in a disposable syringe. You throw the syringe out. It contained thimerosal, and it contained quite a bit of thimerosal. And it was given to the pregnant woman at 27 weeks gestation. Now, you tell the woman not to eat a tuna fish sandwich, but then you zap her with 30 micrograms of mercury when you don't need it, because it is a unidose. It is a single dose. The hepatitis B vaccine that we used to give to infants at birth, shortly after birth, from 1991 to 1999, contained 12.5 micrograms of mercury. Now, that was always a unidose. It was a single dose. You took it from the vial, you threw out the vial. It was not a multiple dose vial that we used.
Well, let me just talk to the mention to our listeners that Dr. Hellermann was the chief vaccinologist who worked for Merck. He was internationally known. And in 1991, he sent a memo to Merck and said, you know, whether it was a hepatitis B or whatever it was, yes, it was a hepatitis B, we're giving them some like children, infants in the nursery, something like 85 or 87 times.
That's correct.
The maximum dose allowed by the EPA. 87 times we're giving them to these children. And, of course, the inference was, shouldn't we be concerned that we're poisoning these kids? And they kept on doing that. That was so unconscionable. They knew what they were doing. There was no justification for giving hepatitis B, because the incidence of hepatitis B in infants or in children, they just don't get it until they get to the point where they're sexually promiscuous. Exactly. And if you're not sexually promiscuous, you're not a homosexual or IV drug users, you're not going to get hepatitis B.
And the vaccine doesn't last. The immunity doesn't last this long.
Right.
And now, the interesting thing is that he compared that 87 times is in comparison to what they consider the safe level in Scandinavia. Now remember that up here they tell you, well, we have a safe level for methyl mercury, you know, the one in the tuna and so on, methyl mercury. We have a safe level which is 0.1 microgram per kilogram per day. But we don't have any safe level for ethyl mercury, which is thimerosal. Well, the fact is that in the 1991 memo, this is the biggest expert on vaccine we have. This guy created 40 vaccines and wrote over 480 published papers. This guy said this is higher than what they consider safe. In other words, the Scandinavians knew what the level of ethyl mercury was that was safe or unsafe. And that's clearly in the memo.
And so they stopped using that mercury and we continued poisoning our children.
That's correct.
And it doesn't make any sense unless, it doesn't make any sense unless maybe there is another agenda, but be that as it may, we have these children exposed to mercury, and then of course, we started giving the MMR vaccine. When was that, about
exactly,
1980 here?
And this is exactly what happened. These children who have this genetic predisposition probably have a problem with detoxification. They have an enzyme or something missing in their genes, and that's the only thing that's genetic about it. Autism is not genetic because you cannot have a genetic epidemic. But they have a genetic predisposition, they cannot detoxify, whether it's they are unable to methylate or they are unable to the sulfur, you know, to break down toxins, in
right.
other words. So they cannot break down the toxins. Then you give them this mercury, they are unable to really neutralize it or excrete it or get rid of it. And so they're now, immune-wise, they are weak and they are tired, and then you hit them with three live virus vaccines together. Now, it's true they are attenuated, but they're still live viruses. We had a good single vaccine, measles, and a good mumps and a good rubella, and we used them for years, 3 months apart, 6 months apart. We were doing all right. Suddenly they said, well, if one is good and two is good and three is good, put them together and that's fine. Well, it's not fine because you're really overloading the child. But not only that, but also here in the United States, unlike anywhere else you give the MMR alone. The day you give the MMR, it's usually alone. The patient goes in and gets the MMR, it's usually at 15 months. Here we bring them in at 1 year of age, and we give them the MMR. Often they are due for a DPT or a Hib, or they are due for their last hepatitis B, or now we added since 1995, the chickenpox vaccine, so that a child age one suddenly, this immune system that just trying to get ahead of the game and trying to mature this immune system, and now obviously remember that at 1 year he's losing all the antibodies from the mother, so this is this very immature immune system suddenly gets hit with multiple antigens on the same day, including four, if you give them the chickenpox vaccine, it will be four live viruses altogether.
And
if you give them MMR alone, it's three live viruses.
But this then really attacks the immune system. Doesn't this suppress the immune system?
Very quickly, and we see this very much with our children. After this vaccination, the children start having ear infections all the time. They start coughing all the time. They develop asthma. They are sickly. They have diarrhea. They have vomiting. They have severe constipation. They don't feel well anymore, and they can't get over it. Now, many of them do get over it and do improve. Some others, like what happened to my grandson, is that 3 months after the first MMR, he stopped acquiring. You have a break?
And we're going to have a break there. And Dr. Yazbek is saying, his grandson, you know, stopped acquiring skills. So what often happens is you have something called regressive autism. Now there is a type of autism that begins at birth. But this was a very, very rare type of autism, very rarely seen, 1 in 10,000 children. And then came the advances in medicine. And as we begin giving more and more vaccines, you found more and more children would be vaccinated at perhaps at 2 years, a year of age, and then they'd suddenly begin to lose their ability to speak or to walk or certainly to respond normally. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Dr. Yazbek, and explore this incredible story. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Dr. Yazbek, and I'll go ahead and sort of pick up the story. You were talking about your grandson.
What happened with him is that he had, you know, my wife is a pediatric nurse practitioner, and I'm a pediatrician with, you know, 30 years plus of experience. And his mother is a very bright woman, his father is a very bright woman. We knew that this kid was normal. We have pictures, we have photos, we have videos. And we get his first MMR, and within 2 months or so, we suddenly see that he has stopped acquiring new skills. And that's what happened first. They don't regress, actually. They first stop acquiring new skills, and then literally started regressing in front of our eyes, losing ground, lost quite a bit, and then as time went by, started to recuperate, started to get over it, started to improve. And then he came to, and because obviously we did not know at the time that MMR vaccination did anything with. And by the time he was four and a half years old, he was doing very well. He got his second MMR, and now this time he was totally devastated and never came back. And his speech is good, has improved when we put him on the gluten-free and casein-free diet, but his socialization is still very inadequate. His speech is not, although the speech is clear, the speech is not appropriate. So the line of thinking is not right, the syntax is not right, but, and there we go. Now this, what I described, is called, you know, this challenge, the first MMR, he falls, he gets better, and he falls again. This is called challenge, de-challenge, re-challenge. This alone should prove causation. But on top of that, we went further with this child. We were in London, we took him to Royal Free, where Dr. Wakefield had his clinic, and they investigated him. They did the colonoscopy and the endoscopy and found that he had had the typical finding that all these other children have in the terminal ileum. He also had some colitis. They put him on a liquid diet for 2 months, an elemental diet, and they started him on a gluten-free diet and gluten-free and casein-free diet, and he started to improve very dramatically, and his speech came back. But as I said, it is not an appropriate speech. Now, while they did the colonoscopy, they also took a biopsy, and which they had a viral identification, and he has evidence of measles virus genomic RNA in his gut wall, in the wall of his intestine, in just submucous. There is no way that he could have had this from anything else, because this only came from the exposure to the vaccine. He never had the measles. And as a matter of fact, in many, many children, we have identified this virus strain to be of vaccine strain, not the wild strain. Now, we don't know, because he's part of that study, we don't know whether my grandson has the vaccine strain or not. It is more than likely that he does, because I went and tested him again here by Dr. Singh in Utah and found that he had high levels of measles antibodies, MMR antibody elevation. Thank God he does not have, like many other children have, he does not have an elevation of his myelin basic protein autoantibody titer, which usually is associated with the worst prognosis, because it means that there is demyelination happening. There is a problem with the myelin sheath of the nerves. This is what we have. We have all this evidence. Now, in addition to this, just to interrupt you for 1 second before I forget, is that now other people have found the same finding we found in the gut. They found it also in the cerebrospinal fluid. So now we have children identified with evidence of measles.
Hold that
virus
part, hold that part right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Yazbek, telling about his grandson. His grandson had the first MMR vaccine and began to regress for a time, and then was really recovered and was doing quite well. He was about 4 years old, went in for his second shot, and of course regressed and never fully came back. He actually eventually was taken to London. They colonoscopy the child, because you have to understand that many of these children have severe diarrhea that comes on after they develop the autism. They get some sort of a autistic colitis, and when they looked in there, they found out specific changes in the bowel that you find in autistic children, and then they biopsied and they found out that there's evidence actually of the measles virus, the specific type of virus that you see associated. It's an attenuated virus, but now it's living in the wall of the intestine, and what it does, it allows a permeability of the wall of the intestine, and now they can begin to absorb the certain milk proteins and gluteins that then can, once they get into the body, into the bloodstream, they can get into the brain, and they begin to suppress the brain, and this is believed to be the basis of a lot of autism. Would that be a fair appraisal of it, Dr. Yazbek?
I think very, very close, absolutely.
You're the expert, so you please. Now, as far as your grandson is concerned, he has improved quite a bit.
He has improved in that, you know, if you look at him, he looks fine. He is very well, you know, his good behavior, he's calm, he's not, you know, many of these children can be violent, can be difficult, scream, be very retarded. He is not, he has recovered some, and there certainly has been an improvement in his intellect as time goes by. He's a wonderful drummer, beautiful musician, but you can see that he will never be able to live alone, to take care of himself, to go to the store and buy things, to fend for himself. He will answer you very nicely on the phone. He'll answer the question very politely, but that's where it stops. There is no more, nothing comes back. He doesn't ask you about things, doesn't have curiosity, he doesn't have interest. So, unfortunately, this will never come back, because I presume that, and there are many kids like this. There are many, many children like this. In the old days, there were fewer, they were badly damaged, but now you have a whole generation of children. I mean, and they're everywhere. I mean, when you say one in 166, that's very evident. So what I call this epidemic of silence that is surrounding this disease is terrible. We have make a big deal about, you know, 2 years ago we made a big deal about SARS. We never had a case of SARS in the United States, and we made a big deal about SARS. Last year we made a big deal about the flu epidemic that never arrived, and when it did arrive, it was another strain of flu than the one we had in the vaccine anyway. And here we are, we have this epidemic, this one in 166. You imagine in your state of California, there's 9 new cases a day introduced into the system.
9 new cases in California.
In California alone. I mean, you had 807 cases introduced in the last quarter of 2004. Divide it any way you want, it's 8 or 9 cases. If you look 10 years ago when we introduced the new criteria, you had 633 cases the whole year.
And now we're having about 3,300 cases.
Exactly.
Here in California. I think people have to understand that there's a law in California that doctors have to report autism. So we have probably the best records anywhere in the world. Wouldn't that be a fairly good statement?
You do, but you know, believe it or not, as I studied other states, the incidence in other states is just as high, if not higher.
Really?
Except that it's not publicized because you don't have... nobody is attracting attention. As I said, it's an epidemic of silence. Nobody is talking about it. It's going to go away because we're not going to talk about it. Well, it's not going to go away. We have lost a generation. And, you know, you don't lose only the child. You lose the parents. You lose the family. 85-90% of these parents divorce. They don't do anything. They cannot do anything. They can't go out to eat. They cannot go on vacation. The child has to have the special food all the time, has special needs all the time. They can't even go to church to pray with the kids. If they go to church, they go alone, or each alone. It is terrible. It is a terrible life for the family. And here we are worrying about diseases that don't exist when we have this horrible disease and nobody is doing much about it.
And I talked to a woman the other day, a physician who had two children that had become autistic after the injections, and now she does full-time treatment for autism, autistic children. Her remark to me was, we've lost a whole generation of children.
Absolutely.
Here in America. Absolutely. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. Yazbek, a retired pediatrician, and we're talking about the epidemic of autism. And of course, we've been hearing so much about the swine flu over in the area, Thailand, Cambodia, and certainly Vietnam. And there have been about 40, well, I think maybe 50 or 60 cases there at this time.
The bird flu.
Right, bird flu, and then, of course, there's one instance, or maybe even two, where it spread from person to person. So we emphasize and they focus our attention on that, while, of course, this terrible epidemic is spreading in America, and nobody wants to ask the question, why? In fact, anybody who comes up with any suggestion that it might be related to the mercury, or it might be related to the MMR vaccine, is immediately demonized and attacked and vilified, and then there's always a new paper that they come up with. We'll talk a little bit about the Danish paper here in a little while, but they'll always point to the Danish paper and see why this definitely proves there's nothing to worry about. Well, let's talk a little bit about Dr. Wakefield, because, you know, there are some wonderful doctors out there totally dedicated to trying to find the truth, and Dr. Wakefield was one of them. He was at one of the most prestigious hospitals in Great Britain, had a very important position there. And why don't you tell his story? Well, I think it's so important.
He is actually the fellow who first found this. He had done research on the fact that when a child gets the measles, people who get two viruses at the same time have the higher incidence of inflammatory bowel disease. And that was, he's an adult gastroenterologist, by the way. And so this mother came and told him, you know, I read your research, and this crazy thing happened to me. This child of mine got his MMR and suddenly became retarded and decompensated. His bowels became awful, and that's how he looks right now. And he started looking at him, and she said, and by the way, I have a friend with the same thing. He said, well, let us have a look at them. And he started studying them, and he found those 12 children that he wrote and reported in The Lancet in 1998. Now, anyone with any sense, any government with any sense, whether it's the British government or the American government, should have said, well, even if this guy is crazy, why don't we look at some kids ourselves? But instead of looking at children, instead of asking parents, nobody talks to parents, nobody asks a history, nobody takes a history, nobody examines the kids, but they go and look at database, and they look at all kinds of statistics, and then they have this epidemiological studies that are popping all over the place. They cost a lot of money, and each one is good for about a month or two, and then it goes into disrepute because the one after it tells
hold that thought right there. We got the stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Yazbek, who is a retired pediatrician, and he was beginning to tell us about Dr. Wakefield. And Dr. Wakefield was a gastroenterologist at a very prestigious hospital in Great Britain. And, of course, he was an adult gastroenterologist, and a woman came to him and read some of his papers and said, you know, my child had the MMR vaccine, and right after that began to regress and of course, developed this intense diarrhea. And I know another woman who has this. And so Dr. Wakefield began talking to parents and found out that this is not an uncommon history. My child was fine until they had the vaccination, the MMR vaccine, and then they began to regress and they developed this enteritis or diarrhea. And so he coined the term, I think it was autistic colitis or enteritis.
Autistic enterocolitis.
Enterocolitis.
Yeah.
And so then he began to scope these children. Why don't you tell our listeners
what
he
found? And then he started to find evidence of the measles presence. I mean, this is what clued him in, that there was evidence of the measles presence. And specifically the measles. And so, and he had O'Leary down in Dublin do this very sophisticated laboratory testing, viral testing, and had confirmation, outside confirmation, then we have duplicated these findings here. Krigsman in Long Island, Bowie in Boston, and in other centers, people have found the same histopathological findings and are finding the same viral findings. And the Japanese went further and found that some of those viruses that they, the mesogenomic RNA was of vaccine strain. So slowly we were building up this very, very strong evidence. And instead of the government saying, well, maybe we should do our own study, they decided to, no, we're going to send you one epidemiological paper after another. Now, no, the fact is that no epidemiological paper, there isn't a single epidemiological paper, regardless of its quality, that can prove a negative. I mean, you can do an epidemiological study that will definitely show that people who smoke a pack a day will get cancer, because you are proving a fact. But you cannot prove that, you cannot do a study that proves that water, smoking does not cause heel spurs. You cannot prove a negative by an epidemiological study. It's loss of time. And the fact is that Mattson himself, when he talked about all the previous studies, now since Wakefield in 1998, we had 7 to 8 studies that were real big studies that everyone came out, when they came out, everybody said they were perfect, they were wonderful, they proved, without doubt, they proved that the MMR did not cause autism. And Mattson came right out and in one sweep sentence, in his second paragraph of his article, said, they did not have the statistical power to find a causation.
Now, who is Mattson?
Mattson is an epidemiologist from Denmark who wrote that famous study from Denmark in 2002 in the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, Mattson himself, now, he said, my paper is the best, and his paper is the one that was co-funded and co-authored by somebody from the CDC, co-funded by the CDC. So obviously he found out that the MMR does not cause autism. I mean, it is inconceivable that the CDC would have paid money to a study to find out that the MMR did cause the problem. Well, so he said the MMR doesn't cause the problem. Within a week, Dr. Switzer, who was a famous epidemiologist at McGill University, wrote to the New England Medical Journal and said, hold on, his calculations are not correct. Here are my calculations in very simple epidemiological terms, and my calculations show that using his data, there is a connection, and MMR, according to his own data, is causing autism in Danish children. That letter was never published. And so they continued to say, well, this is the best study ever, and this study was used by the IOM, the Institute of Medicine Special Committee, last year, to say that there was no MMR connection.
And I think what people have to understand is there are tremendous forces in this country that are putting every pressure and to bear and coming up with all sorts of studies to justify vaccinations, because they're afraid for the American people to know the truth. I mean, we have a major destruction of a whole generation of our youth, terrible damage to their ability to think. Our children, when they graduate from high school, collectively cannot compete with children from other countries. The studies show this when they actually tested them as seniors and compared them with the kids from Lithuania and Latvia and all the rest of the world. We are at the bottom of 16 other countries, and it isn't simply because our educational system is bad, which it is, but there are other things that are going on with their ability to think. Why would this be? Well, you know, if we get into the background of this, and let's talk a little bit about the Danish study, because didn't they actually begin comparing apples and oranges?
Well, exactly. I mean, it was just totally. We actually, Dr. Gary Goldman from California, and myself, I received all the figures, and I immediately realized that whatever he was saying in his paper was not right. So I looked and studied as much as I could, and then I asked Dr. Goldman to look at them, and both of us published a paper that actually effectively destroyed the all what Madsen had said and proved, and we proved, very clearly that incidence of autism had increased in Denmark after the introduction of the MMR vaccine.
Now, of course, they weren't having any mercury in there, but they were seeing an increase in the incidence of autism once the MMR was introduced, even though they had no mercury there.
Not only that. Well, just to take you one minute, is that we published this paper in September, and obviously none of the big journals wanted to publish our paper because of my God, we're going to bring down the Danish group. But then we had it published in the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, and it's available online at www.jpns.com. .org. And in the September, in the fall issue 2004. But Madsen himself has never, today we have the end of March, he has never come up and said, well, Dr. Yazbek is wrong. My paper stands and Dr. Yazbek is wrong. So he has disappeared. He has never picked us up. And we believe that it's because he's unable to defend his paper. Nobody else defended his paper. The CDC did not come out and say, well, your arguments are wrong and this paper still stands. The fact is that 10 months later, Madsen himself, to prove that thimerosal does not cause autism, now they hired him to also prove that thimerosal does not cause autism. In his second paper, 10 months after the first one, he said, there has been a tremendous increase in autism in Denmark after 1991, when there was no thimerosal. So when he wanted to use the argument of the increase, he used it effectively in the thimerosal paper, but did not want to mention it in his paper, which easily shows that there was an increase.
For our listeners out there, there's no thimerosal in the vaccines that they use
in
Denmark. So basically, he's trying to say, look, the increase in autism isn't coming from thimerosal, because, look, there's no thimerosal in the vaccine, but look at the marked increase we have in autism. And then he turns right around and says, well, of course, the statistics show no increase at all in autism with the MMR, so obviously MMR isn't producing autism, so you can't have it both ways.
In his study, in fairness to him, he came out with a good slant when he took the MMR study. He compared the children who had received the MMR to those who had not received the MMR. But in fact, he also, there was a lot of problems with that study because the study was short. As you know, when you start the MMR vaccination in 1987 in the country, it started in 87 in Denmark, it took a few years for the majority of the children to be vaccinated so that the maximum effect of the vaccine be apparent. Then in Denmark, it takes them 4 or 5 years to make the diagnosis. Actually, the diagnosis is made on average at the age of 5. Therefore, when he took from 1991, which was 4 years after the introduction of the MMR, to 1998, anyone born after 1994 could not have developed autism, because even if he had developed autism, he was not diagnosed yet. So even when the number of cases increased, they could not be picked up. When we went 2 years further, we looked at the year 2000, 2001, the rise, and this is available in our study and is very visible. We put it on a graph. The graph goes up at 45 degrees because you have to have enough children vaccinated and the time to have them diagnosed. You have to have 4 years in the beginning and 4 years at the end, or 5 years in the beginning, 5 years at the end. So if you take a shorter period, you'll never see them. The fact is that he himself, a year later, said, yes, there was a tremendous increase. Well, anyway, so that's how we ended up with him. And then, as you know, nobody much talked about Madsen now, but now we have this new study from Japan, and it took a little honeymoon in the last 2 weeks after it appeared, but it has already gone into total eclipse. A total eclipse. Nobody talks about it now. Because now this time we're all awake and alert. So the moment these people got up, we literally destroyed it in about 3 to 4 days. Dr. Dr. Wayfield wrote a paper, I wrote a paper, and this study from Japan was, I mean, if it wasn't so sad that such a paper exists, first the guy himself, the author himself, said that it could not prove that MMR does not cause autism in a small number of cases. That the first thing. And then the other thing is that they had an English co-author. Well, you know, I looked at 200 successive studies by anyone called Honda, which is the main author that wrote the paper, and there are only three other studies that had a non-Oriental name as an author. So they don't usually invite people from England to write a paper totally, the paper was totally related to Japanese data, Japanese follow-up of the Japanese situation for years. And the very last sentence, he comes up and says, well, this means that we should not stop MMR in England. So visibly it came up. Then you look at the author, this British author, and this author was a consultant for GlaxoSmithKline, who was one of the manufacturers of the MMR, and this guy was also a consultant for the government as an expert consultant about the MMR situation.
He was hardly impartial, let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, it was really peculiar. Now, in Japan, they introduced a new classification just the year. The argument that the Japanese did, and it was a smart argument. They said, well, you know, after we removed MMR from Japan, autism increased. Therefore, it must be due to other causes other than MMR. But the fact is that autism also had increased while MMR was being used. But MMR was never popular in Japan because they had a very bad brand of vaccine that contained the Urabi strain, which caused a lot of mumps and encephalopathy. And encephalitis. So the fact is that nobody ever liked MMR too much in Japan. There was very little use of it. It really could not have impacted very much one way or another. But the fact is that when it was used, autism did increase. And it increased less than in England. Therefore, the argument that he used could be used in reverse and tell him, well, you know, here are two countries, the same years. While MMR was used very little in Japan, there was a slow increase. While MMR was used very much in England, there was a large increase. Therefore, MMR causes autism. He also, and as I said, there was a classification to explain the rise after MMR was stopped. He never mentioned it. There also was a tremendous increase in vaccination after MMR was stopped. There was an increase in the single vaccine, but interestingly, because they wanted to vaccinate children, they were administering the single vaccine, which was supposed to be spread a month, 2 months, or 3 months apart. They were given sometimes on the same day. Now, you know that if you give two or three live virus vaccines from three different vials on the same day, whether you give them from the same vial on the same day, you get to the same result, as you well know. The other thing is that they also had a tremendous increase in the use of Japanese encephalitis vaccine, which contained thimerosal. There were a lot of factors coming into play in Japan. And again, you could not possibly compare Japanese vaccination practices to anyone else in the world, not only to the United States or them. They have always had their very unique way of vaccination. They either stop vaccination completely, or they start it, or they make it at the request of the parents, and it was very difficult to follow their vaccination practices and compare them to ours. And we shouldn't. We should never compare them. What we should do is check children in the United States. What do we have to go run to Finland and Scandinavia? And, you know, next time we're going to get an epidemiological study from Central Africa to talk about America. I mean, it's exactly like Boyd Haley said so well. It's exactly like doing a study about malaria in Minnesota. I mean, you have to really... it is true. It is incredible that we have to go and compare uncomparable populations.
Well, one point I would like to cover, and that is the treatment. Now, there has been an organized effort about 2 months ago when suddenly the attention of the controlled media was focused on autism to say, oh, there's nothing that can be done. You know, certainly don't even think about, getting these bizarre, quack types of treatments and chelation and these other things. They don't even mention the diet, and yet certainly these things are beneficial, aren't they? At least the diet.
Well, certainly the diet, in when it is definitely a case, in our case it was miraculous. I mean, it was miraculous. He had no speech and he started talking. So it was miraculous and we saw it and it was just amazing. I mean, when I tell you no speech, I mean not a single word. If it is post-MMR and if indeed you can identify the gut finding and if you can do, we can do some urine tests to know whether there is any of this product in the urine that we need to get out of the urine with the diet, then the diet works magnificently. Now, but I have to say, in fairness to the people who are looking at the mercury side, is that there are some people who have had some wonderful results with chelation on the mercury side. Not everyone, but if it was mercury induced, and if indeed there's evidence of a high mercury, then removing the toxin does help children. I have no personal experience with it. My only experience is with the diet, the gluten-free and casein-free diet, and I can tell you without any doubt that it works when indicated for those who need it.
Okay, hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Dr. Yazbek. We're simply talking about the treatment, and with the children that have the colitis, of course, what happens is their increased permeability of the bowel wall, and they begin to absorb things from the intestine which ordinarily would never pass through. And these would be the breakdown products of wheat, gluten, and, of course, the breakdown products of milk. They get into the blood, they get into the brain, and they begin to have a toxic effect. Some people say they almost act as if endorphins or morphine-like products, and these children just can't think. And of course, I've heard the same story from other people as well as Dr. Yazbek, that when they properly, if this is the child that has this response referable to the colitis, and you put them on a special diet, it's almost like a miracle. Would that be a fair statement?
It is indeed. And if the diet is not perfect, if by mistake he gets a piece of bread or a cracker, immediately you see a deterioration of the behavior. I mean, it's instantaneous. And you know, for years, us pediatricians have seen this with celiac. The children who are on the diet when somehow gluten is introduced by mistake, their behavior changes. Obviously, with autism, the behavior becomes awful, and they act out, they start becoming aggressive, they start hurting themselves. You put them back on the diet, they smooth down, they quiet down. The very first time we did the diet, and maybe within 4 or 5 days, the child had typical withdrawal symptoms. I mean, it was heartbreaking. It was just coming down because those things are really, they are called casomorphine and gliomorphine and desmorphine, dermorphine, and so on. And he had typical withdrawal symptoms, and then he became peaceful, the speech returned, things got better, and obviously we have been very careful with the diet. We have a whole pantry full of stuff for him so that he only eats what he has to eat. He has his own toaster. We don't even toast his bread in our toaster. His own jar of jam, so that in case one of us had touched some butter or some bread and put it back into the jam jar that was contaminated, he has everything is labeled for him. It has to be a very strict diet, and if it is a strict diet, there is a tremendous improvement, obviously associated with the ABA. Now, if you notice, on all the week that was spent on TV talking about this thing, nobody talked about the diet.
Hold that thought for just a moment, and we'll just bring our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been Dr. Yazbek. And Dr. Yazbek, we could go on for another hour, but unfortunately the time is up. I just want to thank you so much for being our guest. You don't have a website. Where can people get your papers and your information?
Well, just simply Google the name Yazbek, Y-A-Z-B-A-K, and then space plus autism, and you'll get them all. Very easy to reach on Google. There's plenty on the internet available. There's plenty published, and they're available also.
That's just Yazbek-autism on Google. The information. Help us get the truth out across America, because you're sure not going to get it from ABC, CBS, and NBC. God bless you, Dr. Yazbek. Thank you so much for being
God
with us.
God bless you, too.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed our program. This is the third in a series of interviews I've done with Dr. Yazbek. A gentleman who's retired now and doing everything he can to get the truth out. Now, it's going to be up to you out there in the listening audience to get the information. We're going to put together a 4-tape set on autism, and it will be available through Radio Liberty, and we want you to get it to your pediatrician. We want to get it to the physicians, and they're not going to get this information through regular channels. And of course, you can pull down the information off the internet, but get it to your doctors so that they will understand what's really going on and the terrible harm that is being done to the minds of our children. We've lost a whole generation of children. America's under attack, but this is part of the plan. And remember those words of Bertrand Russell. You've heard me say it, quote them before. Page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society. The Impact of Science on Society. On page 50, Bertrand Russell says, you know, by the use of diet and injections and injunctions, why we're going to be able to mold the character of the child the way that the state wants it. And that's, in essence, what they've done. A massive experiment. They know what they're doing. They knew back in 1991 how toxic the mercury was in the vaccines, because they took it out. The vaccines that they sent to Scandinavia, but they kept it in our vaccines, knowing full well it was going to destroy the brains. But you see, what Bertrand Russell goes on to say is, we'll be able to have two races. We'll have the elite, and then we'll have the others, and there'll be no relationship between them. And of course, a revolt of the plebs against the elite would be like a vote of the a revolt of the sheep against the practice of eating mutton. Those are his words from page 51 of his book. Understand that there are evil and wicked people out there, and they've destroyed a whole generation of our children. Oh, they'll make good cannon fodder, as Bertrand Russell talks about on pages 50 and 51. We need cannon fodder for the wars we're going to have, but we want to have these two groups. Could anything be this evil? Ladies and gentlemen, you need to get our material. Much of it is up on the web. If you need to get the November newsletters, we've got the references, the page references. If you'd like a free copy of our November newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll tell you about water fluoridation, but this carries over, of course, to mercury, to aspartame, the other things that they put in our food and in our injections to poison our children. Could anything be this evil? Well, you need to read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, you can get the book by itself or the video or the audio tape as The Brotherhood of Darkness Special. If you'd like more information, go to our website at radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com, or call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need to get Dr. Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You need to get our 4-tape sets on fluoride and mercury, aspartame, which is NutraSweet, and vaccinations. You need to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, my video, None Dare Call It Genocide. They're all important. They will all tell you the story. And you need to get the information. You need to educate others, because they've destroyed a generation of our children. Until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Lindsay Williams, who's written a number of excellent books, The Energy Non-Crisis, and, well, we'll let him tell you a little bit about the books here shortly. But right now, Lindsay's with us. The price of oil is up to $56 a barrel. And I want to tell you, you're going to look back on these days as the time of cheap oil. Why is the price of oil going up? Well, in large part, because the dollar is falling. And actually, if you compare where the dollar was, a couple of years ago and where the price of oil is today, why the oil has not really gone up that much, but it's going to go up much higher. Why? Because of the demand from China, because of the rising demand from India as these countries begin to industrialize and more cars on the streets over there. And, right now I think it's about 80, 88 million barrels a day that are required. They're talking about the necessity of, within another 6 or 8 years, of 120 million barrels of oil a day. And what they've effectively done here, because of the environmental movement, which has been funded by our great tax-exempt foundations, and yes, by our great corporations, why they have blocked the drilling for oil in Alaska and many of the places where they know there's large supplies of oil and offshore. They've blocked the development of nuclear power plants. Oh, we're guaranteeing right now $5 billion of loans for communist China. They can begin putting in nuclear power plants, the beginning of a $50 billion program. And we're guaranteeing the loans for communist China so they can build up their nuclear power plants. But, oh, we can't have them here in the United States. Because what would we do with the spent fuel? Well, if we really wanted to, we'd do what every other country does. We'd reprocess the fuel. Oh, we couldn't do that. Why, we might make plutonium. Well, we're not concerned about the communist Chinese over there making plutonium to be used in nuclear weapons. In fact, we're funding this whole incredible thing. We have effectively blocked methods of getting clean emissions from coal in many instances. And you can actually make oil out of coal. We have the oil shale up in Canada. Of course, the Chinese communists are taking that over. Of the oil sands, there's enough oil there, for the United States for 30 or 40 years. But we're not going ahead and developing this sort of thing. Everything is being done to create a crisis. And when you understand they want a crisis, so they can come up with a solution. And the ultimate solution is going to be, they're going to get you out of your car. That's what they really intend. That's part of the master plan. It's laid out in something called the Global Biodiversity Assessment that came out of the Second Earth Summit, probably the most important meeting of the last century. You've never heard of it because you're not supposed to. But this was held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992 with Maurice Strong in charge, and laid out the plan that was put forward by Prince Charles and the Prince of Wales Economic Summit meeting, where I think certainly Al Gore and I think John Kerry was there in 1992 or 1991. The whole plan is laid out. They're going to get you out of your cars. They're going to impoverish the American people. They're going to lower our living standards, because why should we have so much when so many people throughout the rest of the world have so little? And what we're going to do is move towards a two-class society. Well, three-class. One will be the elite, like Prince Charles and Maurice Strong and the others, John Kerry. And then there will be a military class, and they're there to control the common people like you and me. We're going to be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Lindsay Williams. Well, Lindsay, certainly oil is certainly going exactly the way you said it was, isn't it?
Dr. Stan, thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show tonight, because I believe that this show tonight is the most important show I have ever had the privilege of doing with you, because there has never been a time in, since I can remember in the late 60s when the long lines were with the gas pump, there has never been a time when there are so many crucial issues in the oil industry and in the oil world than right now.
Well, I share your concern, and I think that it's only going to get worse. They're going to be up and down and up and down, but it's going to be progressively up. I have no question that they're going to do in this country what they've done in Great Britain and what they've done in Europe, where they're, everything is entirely different. Gasoline is $6 a gallon. As I've heard, it's up to even to $8 a gallon in England. And, of course, then people have to have very small cars, and only the very wealthy are able to have cars. Everybody has a bicycle. People are using mass transit, and that, of course, is one reason they're stressing mass transit. Why? Because they know what lies ahead. They just don't want the American people to know. Do you think that would be a fair appraisal?
Oh, positively. In fact, I have never been so glad in all my life that I wrote my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, when I did. Just a few of the issues tonight that I'm looking at that literally startle me. Number one, OPEC Arab oil producers are at maximum output today, right now, on March the 24th, 2005. Maximum output. They can't put out any more without more flow line pipes, without more tankers. Secondly, every oil refinery in the United States of America is operating at 100% capacity tonight. Diesel fuel here in the state of Arizona has just gone up to $2.47 a gallon. Then, California premium fuel, I understand, is over $3 a gallon. And yesterday, of all things, an oil refinery explosion in Texas. I predict gasoline prices to be $3 to $4 in the very near future per gallon. In business news today, they were stating $60, $70, $80 a barrel for crude oil. And then I look back at the records that I've been keeping just recently, because I've been so startled at almost every report in the afternoons. And here are just a few for those out in the listening audience. And you'll understand why I say that I believe that this show tonight is the most important show that I have ever had the privilege of doing with Dr. Stan. You've allowed me on your show for numbers of times, and I have appreciated it immensely. But
hold that thought, Lindsay. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Lindsay Williams, and Lindsay was just saying that, you know, as we look and see what's going on, we realize that OPEC is producing oil at full capacity, that they need more pipelines, it takes time to build them. What people don't want to mention is that there is a shortage of oil tankers to move the oil from the point of production to here, and not only that, but they've effectively barred any building of refineries here in the United States for a number of years. And then, of course, our refineries in the United States are operating at full capacity, and within the last 48 hours, a massive explosion. I think it was in Texas now. And suddenly we're going to find that the supplies of gasoline are going to be markedly restricted. You can anticipate it's only a matter of time before the prices begin going up. And pick up the story there, Lindsay.
Since the late 60s, Dr. Stan, there has never been a time since the late 60s when there were long lines at the gas pump. They said that we had a crisis of oil, that the price went up from 35 cents a gallon to $1.50 a gallon. There has never been a time from then until now when there was such a drastic crisis looming on the horizon, and the average American has not the slightest idea how vulnerable we are right now, and how tomorrow morning or any time in the very near future, we could have another major disaster in this country and worldwide in relation to crude oil. I was just looking over tonight as I was putting my notes together, because I am so startled over what's happening right now with oil. I was looking over some past notes that I have. Let me just review for the sake of those out there in the listening audience. January the 24th, 2005. Now, I'm coming down the line with the price of crude oil. Watch and see what's happening. January the 24th, 2005, the price of crude oil, a barrel, was $48.51. January of this year, the 27th, 2005, $49.10. Now let's go up to March. March the 15th of this year, $55.05 a barrel. Now let's go to March the 16th, one day later, $56.35 a barrel. Now let's go to the 17th of March. We're getting down close to where we are. $57.05 a barrel. Now let's go to the 18th of March. $56.72 a barrel. Now come down to right where we are today. March the 21st of this week. $56.52 a barrel. And from the opening of the market this morning until the close of the market, it went up $1.64. We are on the verge of a disaster and a crisis with OPEC's output being maximum, every refinery in America at 100% capacity, and a refinery explosion in Texas. There's only one thing for there to happen. The price at the gas pump is going up. And
you know,
it's going to go up to $3 to $4 a gallon.
I think that's so interesting, Lindsay. You know, if you read the government statistics, they tell you we have a 2% inflation in America. There's only a 2% inflation. Now, of course, if you go to the grocery store and you look at the price of fruit and vegetables, why, they're skyrocketing. If you look at your electricity bill, it's gone up probably somewhere between 50 and 100%. If you look at the price of gasoline, it's going through the roof. If you look at the price of housing, it's increasing, and rent is increasing, and the government assures us, why, there is no inflation in America. Everything is under control. Are you going to believe us, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? I love that line, because I think anybody with half an ounce of intelligence knows that they're lying to us. They are trying to convince there's no inflation. Of course there's inflation. The prices are going up. I just ordered something the other day and out of a catalog, and it was more than it was in the catalog. I went down the day before yesterday, to Staples to buy something, a cartridge of ink for our copier machine, and it got up from $119 to $125. In fact, they hadn't even time to change the price on the shelf, but of course they've been changing the computer. Prices are going up, but of course the American people don't believe that, because after all, they assure us that certainly unemployment is low, nobody's losing their jobs, 4.5% unemployment, lots of new jobs out there, and that of course there is no inflation. We've got it down to 2%. It's a lie, ladies and gentlemen. And if you believe that, why, you probably believe we attacked Iraq because they had weapons of mass destruction. When are the American people going to realize that there is an elite out there, and Lindsay, of course, writes about that in some of his books, who control everything, who control our reality, and they have an agenda that if the American people understood, they would rise up and vote the scoundrels out of office and realize that we have a one-party system with two branches. It's time we took America back. Pick up the story there, Lindsay.
Well, Dr. Stan, I have some very startling statements that I'm going to make tonight because of some conclusions that I have come to this week. I must admit that I have been shaken out of all lethargy that was left in me this week because of what's happening in crude oil. I don't think the average American has the slightest idea just how on the verge of a major crisis that we are. For that reason, I hope that you'll have a pencil and paper handy in a few moments, because I would like to give you a copy of my book, The Energy Non-Crisis. It's over 200 pages. It has a full-color cover. This is not a pamphlet. This is a full-length book of my story of what I lived for the past 25 years in relation to oil. But here are some startling statements that I want to make I've been shaken this week, and here's one right here. Be sure and jot this one down. The standard currency of the world is oil. Now, wait a minute. Before you become judgmental on that statement, listen to me through for just a moment or two. Again, let me state it, and then I'm going to show you why I'm saying this. The standard currency of the world today is oil. Will it be denominated in euros or the dollar? That will determine whether the euro is the most important currency in the world, or the dollar or some other currency is the most important currency in the world. Federal Reserve notes are only a piece of paper. They have no backing whatsoever. An illustration. I'm sitting here with a silver dollar in my hand. I remember back in 1960, that silver dollar was worth $1. I could go down to the bank. I could exchange it for $1 of paper. 2005, where are we? That silver dollar, if I wanted to buy it, no. I could not go to the bank and buy it for one Federal Reserve note. It would take somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 14 Federal Reserve notes to buy it. Now, let's look at the price of oil, and I'm going to prove to you that the standard currency of the world is oil, not dollars, but oil. And whatever the price of oil is, and whoever it is denominated in, it determines which is the most important currency and what the value of it is. Here it is. Now, watch. The price of a gallon of gasoline at the gas pump in 1960 was 35 cents a gallon. 2005, it is $3 a gallon. Now remember, the price of that silver dollar in 1960 was $1. Today, it's $12 to $14. 35 cents, $3. Now, that is the exact proportion if you look at it. Inflation is controlled by oil prices. The hardware at the hardware store, the groceries at the grocery store, everything that Dr. Stan just mentioned a moment ago, it is not the value of the dollar. It's the value of the oil that is determining the currency of the world and the value of the currency of the world. Now, the Bush-Cheney dynasty, and please note my words carefully, I'm really sticking my neck out here. The Bush-Cheney dynasty wants, now watch this, ANWR, the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, they've just said this past week they're going to go in there and drill. You say they want it? Sure they do. Why? They know it takes 4 to 5 years, maybe 5 to 6 years before they can bring one drop of oil out of there. That's exactly what they want, because they want to keep us obligated to the Arabs, thinking that we can't produce oil from our own oil field immediately. The only place on the face of this earth that you will find the story of the largest oil pool in North America, and maybe the largest oil pool on the face of this earth, is in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, because I was there the day that Gull Island was tested and the time that the oil was brought up. And you must, it's vital to the security of this nation for every person to read the story, if Gull Island didn't blow your mind this well, and to know that that chapter was written by the senior executive of Atlantic Richfield, because he became so angered after they had fired him when my first book came out. And he said, Lindsay, I'd like to write that chapter for your book. And only if somebody would wake up today and realize we have no shortage. There is as much crude oil on the North Slope of Alaska as there is in Saudi Arabia. But they want to put up a smoke screen about the Arctic Wildlife Refuge in ANWR and say we're going to drill there, while all they're doing is saying we don't have enough over here to do it. The truth of the matter is, we already have it. It's within a 1 mile of where the flow line pipes begin at Prudhoe Bay, and it must be allowed to come to the American people. Please let me give you a copy of my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, and I'll tell you how in just a few moments. Read the chapter. Gull Island will blow your mind, and the next chapter, the sequel to it, if Gull Island doesn't blow your mind, this will, and you'll realize we have no shortage, except as has been created by the Bush-Cheney dynasty, and they are creating a smokescreen by saying we're going into ANWR just this past week. They're milking America.
Well, of course they are, but then where does the Bush family get their money? Why, of course, out of oil. And, of course, they're very, very close to the Saudi Arabians. George Herbert Walker Bush is very close to the Saudis. Of course, it's a wonderful book we've done some interviews on, The House of Bush, The House of Saud. You really need to see that, as, of course, George Bush is holding hands with his very well-known Saudi prince. Fascinating book, fascinating interviews. And, of course, you have to understand we're being manipulated. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, Lindsay Whiting. We Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Lindsay Williams. We're talking about the oil shortage. And, of course, you hear a great deal about Hubert's Peak, and this is the idea. We're running out of oil. The peak, this is peak oil. It's all on the downside. Well, I'm old enough to remember 1973. When they were doing exactly the same thing 30 years ago, 32 years ago, when we had the long lines at the gas stations and the television programs. They were sponsored by the oil companies, and they had pictures of these funny-looking little dinosaurs, dinosaurs running around and smiling at one another. And the caption was, "We're running out of dinosaurs. Are there no more dinosaurs? We're not going to have any more oil." Now, there was never any evidence that oil came from decomposing dinosaurs or where the oil came from. And I'm not saying that I'm smart enough to know where the oil came from, but one thing I'm sure is there were never enough dinosaurs to produce all the oil that we have in this world. But there was a massive propaganda campaign 32 years ago, night after night on television. "We're running out of oil. We're running out of oil. We're running out of oil." And if you don't believe it, let me tell you, we're running out of oil. They had the experts. They had the cartoons. They had the people in Washington, D.C. talking. And there were lines, of course. It was all artificially created at that time for the impact it would have on the minds and hearts of the American people. And then, you know, within a few years, the world was awash in oil, and the prices were down. They rose dramatically, and then, of course, once the money and the profits had been made, they fell off again. You have to understand that the whole idea is to manipulate the American people to control the response. Now, since that time, of course, we've had the Earth Summit meetings. The first Earth Summit meeting was in 1972. The second Earth, which was just 1 year before those long lines came up, and they were really, I think, trying to see how gullible and naive the American people were. And I think they were convinced they were pretty gullible and naive. And then, of course, we had the Second Earth Summit in 1992, where they laid out the master plan. And you can get it. It's called the Global Biodiversity Assessment. The Global Biodiversity Assessment, it's 1,152 pages, published by the Cambridge University Press. And you can order that through your bookstore. It was available a year or so ago. We have summarized that in our sustainable development syllabus, but so much of this centers around how they're going to lower the living standards of the American people and get them out of their cars and redistribute the wealth of the people in this country to other countries, but they can't tell the American people that. But gradually, little bit by little bit, the living standards of our people are going down. At one time, a man could make enough money so his wife could stay home, and he could put his children through school, and he could buy a house. And I defy you today, you know, to have one person working in the family and have enough money to put your children through school and have enough money to buy a house. It's almost impossible to do today. And that's not happening by accident. It's part of a plan. They don't want the women, of course, at home taking care of the children, because they might have more children. They're trying to control the population here in this country, and they're doing a very good job of it through abortion, but mainly because women are forced to go into the workforce. They're being forced to work simply to make ends meet. This is not happening by accident. It's happening by intent, and we're going to be back here in just a moment with Lindsay Williams and let him develop his ideas, because he knows what's going on. Actually, I checked out his story. I checked out one of the men who was with him when he was on the oil pipeline there in the early 70s, and Gull Island is real. Okay, Lindsay, pick up the story. We've got all of our listeners back now.
Well, Dr. Stan, basically let me very quickly recap the story as to how I came by the knowledge of all of this so that the people will understand that I am credible. The beginning of my book, the foreword, is written by Senator Hugh Chance. If you wish credibility, there's no more that could be given than an outstanding Christian gentleman who came to Alaska and saw it for himself. But it all started with me in 1970. I was a missionary in the state of Alaska. They announced that year they were going to build the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, and the first thing that came to my mind was 25,000 pipeliners, the most cussingest, drinkingest, ornery folks on the face of the earth, and they must need some spiritual guidance. So I went to the 9 major oil companies who were going to build that pipeline, and I said, "Don't you need a chaplain on the pipeline?" Their first response was, "A chaplain? We don't know what to do with you. Well, finally, after many, many tries, they allowed me on the pipeline, gave me the 7 work camps from Prudhoe Bay down to Galbraith Lake in the Brooks Mountains, where the big oil field is. And about 6 months later, I was 6 weeks on the pipeline and a week at home and back 6 weeks on the pipeline working with the men. And about 6 months later, Mr. R.H. King, personnel relations man with Alyeska, came to me and said, "Chaplain, we never realized what you could do for us." He said, "You're saving us thousands of dollars in counseling fees." He said, "We, at our last meeting, have just voted to give you executive status." And I said, "Well, what does this mean?" He said, "You can go any place you'd like, say anything you'd like to help us host dignitaries who come to the pipeline. And we'd like to invite you to sit in on our board meetings in an advisory capacity in order to help the relationship between management and labor." What I saw for the next 3 years and what I heard as I rubbed shoulders with the most powerful, controlling, manipulative people on the face of this earth, and believe me, there is a group of people on the face of the earth who control the world. I know. I lived with them for 3 years. They came to Prudhoe Bay, and what I heard and saw changed my life. If someone had said to me in 1970, "Lindsay Williams, a Baptist minister of 25 years, do you believe that there's a group of people on the face of the earth that control the world?" I would have laughed at them and said, "Who are you, a John Birchall?" If someone had said to me in 1980, "Do you believe there are people who tell presidents what to do, manipulate the world, and control Congress and the Arab world?" I would have said, "Not only do I believe it, I sat and listened to them talk about it. I heard them talk about a 30-year plan for the Arabs. I heard them talk about what they were going to do, and their timetable has followed exactly what I heard back in those days. I never snooped. I never went any place that I was told not to go. I saw it. And therefore, after it was all over with, in 3 years, with these people, whom very few people ever have an opportunity to rub shoulders with, after 3 years, I said, I cannot keep quiet. I must tell the world. The long lines at the gas pump were a total misnomer. There is no shortage. Peak oil is a farce. We have as much crude oil on the north slope of Alaska as there is in Saudi Arabia. And I dared to write the manuscript to my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, because I felt a moral obligation to tell the world what I had seen and heard as I rubbed shoulders with these powerful people on the north slope of Alaska.
And that book came out about, what, 1981?
That was 1981, yes, when the first edition of my book, Energy Non-Crisis, came out. And just after it came out, it went around the world in a short period of time, became a bestseller in no time, hardly. And I would almost guarantee today that I'd just written it. It's becoming so popular again. And I remember just after the book was written, Mr. Ken Fromm, who is a Mr. X of my book, Energy Non-Crisis, senior executive with Atlantic Richfield, who produced the entire east side of the Prudhoe Bay oil field. He called me on the phone one day, and he was so angry, I thought he could have bit a 10-penny nail into. He said, "Lindsay, I am so mad, I don't know what to do." He said, "Atlantic Richfield has just fired me because they found out that I was the one that allowed you to have a lot of this information." And he said, "I'll tell you what, there are just a few things in your book that are not quite correct." And he said, "They would discredit your entire book and make you look like a fool if they weren't right." And he said, "You're a preacher, not an oil man." So he said, "Tell you what to do. I want to rewrite your book for you." And I said, "Ken, I'd love it." We sat together hour after hour for day after day. He rewrote what is today the updated and enlarged edition of the Energy Non-Crisis. And in it, he put a chapter, "If Gull Island doesn't blow your mind, this will."
And, of course, the thing is that the gentleman was, once this new book came out, and Atlantic Richfield understood what he'd done, they hired him back again. Why? Because they couldn't have somebody out there telling the American people the truth. And to this day, he will not come forward and tell the American people the truth. However, I was able to reach somebody else who does now work. Atlantic Richfield was bought for BP, and this other man, knew Lindsay, was with him up there, and he verified, of course, what Lindsay has said. He would not come on the program. He's still working for BP. But believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they know, but they don't want you to know the truth about the Energy Non-Crisis. We'll be right back in just a moment with Lindsay Williams. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest now is Lindsay Williams, and he's telling you the story of how he happened to write his book, The Energy Nine Crisis. I can remember when it first came out, and I got a copy of it, I guess 1981, 1982. I'd never talked to Lindsay at that time, but I read it, and I agreed that we were not being told the truth. I of course, realized that everything was manipulation at that time, but, of course, I was busy practicing medicine. I didn't have the time to analyze what was going on. It was only recently, when we began hearing all about peak oil, that I said, I've got to track down Lindsay Williams and get him onto our program. So we've had him on a number of our programs, our weekend programs on several occasions, and on our other programs. And I know that Lindsay's really had an opportunity now and gotten on many other radio programs. And the message is really getting out, isn't it, Lindsay?
Dr. Stan, if I didn't know better, I would think that I just wrote my book within the past 6 months. It has taken, it is leaped into... In fact, someone asked me the other day, the people who take my 800 service up in Washington State, they said, are you going to be willing to reprint your book, The Energy Non-Crisis, because my supply was getting a little lower? I said, yes, the way things are going, they are literally milking America to death today. Back in the late or the middle 60s and late 60s, the price of a gallon of gasoline, I remember very well, was 35 cents a gallon. Then it went to $1.50 a gallon. They created the crisis in order to create the price of the gallon of gasoline. Now, today, I see the identical same scenario again taking place. Oil prices. Everything is set. The whole stage is in place. OPEC Arab, maximum output. Every oil refinery in America operating at 100% capacity. Then this explosion in Texas just a few days. The whole scenario is being replayed. It's almost like taking a movie of 30 years ago and replaying it again today. They're milking America to death. The price of a gallon of gasoline at the gas pump is a form of taxation. It is not necessarily the price of a gallon of gasoline that matters. Saudi Arabia gets crude oil out of the ground at 30 cents a barrel. Oh, that startles some people, yes. Their pipelines have been built. They've paid for them long, long time ago. 30 cents a barrel. North Slope of Alaska oil comes out of the ground at the basic cost of $3 per barrel. Yet, today, the price of a barrel of crude oil went to $54.84. The other day it was $56.
Hold that thought right there. Let's see. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Lindsay Williams, and we're talking about what's really happening to the price of oil. He was just saying that in Saudi Arabia, the oil comes out of the ground at about 30 cents a gallon. Here, a barrel, I should say. In the North Slope, it costs about $3 a barrel. Once it gets out, of course, then they have to bring it down to the pipeline. But believe me, they're running up the prices. They're making money like it was going out of style. And they say, oh, well, we have to make this money so we can do more exploration. They know where the oil is. They just don't want to bring it online because they want to be able to manipulate us. And without oil, why our country begins to collapse. But the only way, of course, they're going to be able to get us out of our cars, the only way they're going to be able to lower our standards of living is going to be to raise that price of oil up higher and higher and higher. And with that as a background, pick it up, Lindsay.
Senator Hugh Chance, I knew him prior to going to Alaska as a missionary. When I saw what I was seeing at Prudhoe Bay, I asked him to come to Alaska and spend a week with me. Very outstanding Christian gentleman, and he did. He came to Alaska, spent 1 week there. While he was there, I arranged for a tour with all of the leading oil company officials. He saw everything. Everything he asked for, they showed him. Please read the foreword to my book, The Energy Non-Crisis. The day before Senator Hugh Chance left Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, to fly back to Colorado, where he was a state senator, he said to me, and it's recorded in the foreword to my book, Energy Non-Crisis, he said, Lindsay, I have been shown everything I asked for. They told me everything, answered every question. I have met with Mr. Fromm, I've met with Mr. Jim Lawler, I've talked with the officials. I've seen the mock-ups of the field. He said, I remember well what I was told by the men who came from Washington, D.C., and briefed me as a state senator in Colorado as to the severity of the energy crisis and why the long lines with the gas pump. He said, what I have seen here this week and the documentation I've been shown, I have come to realize that almost everything I was told by those men from Washington, D.C. in that briefing as I sat in the Senate in the state of Colorado was an intentional misbriefing. I was lied to. I was intentionally misled. And, Dr. Stan, I believe that many of our government officials having just that happen to them today. Now, I'm quite sure that the Bush-Cheney dynasty knows the issue. But the American people and many of our congressmen and especially our state senators have been intentionally misbriefed. As a result, they are milking America today for everything we're worth. Oil prices. It is a form of taxation at the gas pump that finally winds up in the pockets of the World Bank. Secondly, it has created inflation. Oh, my goodness. Please watch the price of what you're paying at the grocery store, the hardware store, the furniture store. Everything revolves around oil. The standard currency of the world is oil, I have come to the conclusion. Thirdly, interest rates. You see what's happening to them. Oh, they say because of inflation and what's happening, the price is going up. We must increase interest rates. It's all a part of the milking of America. Then Iraq. What a dastardly event. I can't. The only way I can put it is, Dr. Stan, I would beg every person in this listening audience tonight to get your newsletter. I have never seen anything like it. What you had on the front of your newsletter the other day, I mentioned to your secretary when I called in the other day, I said, every month I think Dr. Stan's newsletter is the greatest I've ever seen in my life, and then the next month he turns around and outdoes himself. Major General Smedley Butler, you had it in your newsletter, and oh, I hope we have time to go a little further on Iraq. War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives.
And that's
only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the few at the expenses of the many. Out of war, few people make huge fortunes.
And that, of course, comes from Major General Smedley Butler's booklet, War is a Racket. And, of course, most people have never heard of it. Most of our military have never heard of it, because the last thing they want is for the military to understand what Major General Smedley Butler, who had two Congressional Records of Honor, who led forces in China and in Nicaragua and Guatemala, and fought in the First World War, certainly was the most famous general of that time. In fact, at one time, the story is told that one of the reporters said to General MacArthur, why, you're going to be as great as general as Smedley Butler. And MacArthur, General MacArthur's reply was, never in a thousand years. That was the way that he was revered by his fellow military officers. And Major General Smedley Butler wrote, War is a Racket. And, of course, if you'd like a free copy of that newsletter, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's the February newsletter. We'll be glad to send you a free copy, 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we really hope that you're going to want to subscribe to it, but we'll be glad to send you a free copy if you'd like. You need to have that information and to really understand what's happening in Iraq today. So pick up the story, please, Lindsay.
Well, Iraq is one of the most startling things imaginable, but may I make my offer to those in the listening audience?
Please do.
Because we only have 1 hour here, yet I have volumes of 4 books that I'm begging to give to you so that you can know the facts and the issues of what's going on. I've written 6 books. 2 of them were bestsellers. I'd like to give away 4 of those 6 tonight. The first one is entitled The Energy Non-Crisis. It's over 200 pages, full-color cover. It tells the entire story of how I lived, the people I rubbed shoulders with, what happened to me during the years on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, and how this is affecting our economy today. My second book was one entitled To Seduce a Nation. Again, these are full-length books, over 200 pages each. My third book, it is a must. There are people who control the world today, and we must know their mindset in order to be able to keep them from destroying our homes, our families, our lives, our businesses. And I decided that the average American, as I traveled around the country, I've lectured in every state in America with the exception of Maine. I've been in Australia, New Zealand, many countries. I said, people did not know, they do not know how the people think who control the world. And I said, since I lived with them for 3 years, I sat in their board meetings, I heard them talking. I said, I must write a book telling it. So I wrote my book entitled Syndrome of Control. It is the thought patterns, the mindset of the international financiers and the world controllers, and it's a must reading for people who want to spare their homes and their family from the horrors of what's taking place in our society today. And then my fourth book entitled You Can Live, again 263 pages, big library size book. Now, I've also produced four videotapes because I have such a heart for everybody out there, that listening audience, and for America. My first one was entitled The Energy Non-Crisis, a one-hour dissertation of what's happening in the energy world. It's a must if you want to know what to do about that gas-guzzling automobile of today. Vaccinations? Oh, please. It's a part of that program also. If you ask Miss Heather Whitestone a few years ago, who was Miss America, if she would do it over again, would she take the DPT shot? Do you know that she was deaf? And her mother said that after she was given a DPT shot, that she became deaf. Beautiful lady. Later became Miss America. If she had it to do over again, would she have taken that DPT shot? No, I don't think so. Please get my video entitled Vaccinations. Two doctors and I team up together to tell the story of how many children have died and what has happened as a result of DPT, MMR, and the other vaccinations, including the flu vaccination. Then, Deadly New Diseases is another video telling of the microbial mutations. My video, Torn from the Land, a marvelous story, 1 hour, professionally done video on what's happening to the family farm. I was back in Indiana a few days ago. A farmer nearly cried as he said, Lindsay, we cannot stand $3 a gallon. We cannot plow those fields for that. Now, with every one of those videotapes that you purchase, I'd like to give you a copy of one of my books. Have the whole set of books. Please get the entire set of videos. There are operators standing by tonight, right now. I know it's late, especially back on the East Coast, but my 800 operators are standing by right now. If you would allow me to give you my books, each book, every time that you purchase a videotape, only $25 plus shipping and handling, they will give you one of the books. Get all four videotapes, you get all four of the books. And all you need to do is call 800-321-2900, and you'll get, as Paul Harvey says, the rest of the story that we just can't possibly tell in 1 hour. So please dial right now, 800-321-2900, and let me give you one of my books with each one of the videotapes that you get. They are milking America. You cannot afford to continue driving 1, 2, and 3 hours round trip to work every day. They're making it so it's impossible for a person to do it. You need to do something else. Make plans ahead by knowing what they're doing. And the only way that we can overcome them is to understand who they are, how, why they're doing what they're doing, and what their thought patterns are. When you know these things, which will be described in my four books that I've just offered to you as a gift if you get them with the videotapes. And Dr. Stan, likewise, has mentioned a number of books that are marvelous, and his newsletter is a must coming to your home every month. You'll realize that there need to be some changes made in our lives in order to be able to counteract what these people are doing. I have tried to analyze lately, what can a person do if they would like to overcome these people? What is the one thing left that is a good method of starting in the average home? And I've only come down to one thing. Every home needs a home-based business. That's right. Keep your family together. The first institution God established in the Garden of Eden was the home, even before the church was established. You need a home-based business where you can keep that family together. Stop paying the World Bank taxes at the gas pump, because the price of a gallon of gas at $2 to $2.50, and it's going to $3 to $4 in the very near future. You'll be paying it, I predict, before the end of the summer. And Dr. Stan says, Lindsay, you're all wrong. I think it's going to go to $5 to $6 a gallon. you must stop paying that World Bank price. If you'd like to know about a home-based business, when you call to ask about my books and videotapes, ask them about a home-based business and what their recommendation would be, because I would like to include in the package with these videotapes and books that you call in about tonight, I'd like to include in that package a free audio tape, a free, that's correct, over 1 hour, in fact it's about an hour and a half long, audio tape that I have done that could save your life, could save your home, and will help to free you from the powers and the forces of these people who are controlling us today. Please, and by the way, those who have gotten my books in the past, did you listen to the audio tape that I included in the package that I sent out lately? If you haven't, please go and get it and listen to it. And for those of you who do get my videotapes and books tonight or tomorrow, whenever you want to call in, please, I will include as a gift in the package a free audio tape of a home-based business, a way that you can free up from the powers that be. You don't have to drive 1, 2, and 3 hours round trip to work every day and pay $2, $3, and $4 a gallon to the gas pump. They are literally milking America. Let's don't let them do it any longer.
Okay, Lindsay, which one of those books did Don Hanson, Senator George Hanson, help you with?
It was quite interesting. I was on speaking tour in Texas, and Congressman George Hanson and I had a number of cities that we were lecturing together in together. We found out that we really agreed on so many things, and one day Congressman Hanson said to me, Lindsay, I could never put it in print, but if you're crazy enough to put it in book form, I will give you some information that's dynamite. I said, well, why wouldn't you write it? Oh, he said it cost me my position in Congress, and he said it might even cost me my life, which, of course, later it almost did. But he sat down one afternoon with a cassette tape recorder and dictated what is about one half of this book entitled Syndrome of Control, which is one of the ones that I'd like to give away. Now, if you want to know what's happening in Iran, and you'd like to know what's going to happen in Iran, and you want to know what we will do in Iran, what the jackals will do in Iran, what the powers that be are doing in Iran, watch out. Oh, please read my book, Syndrome of Control, so that you'll know what to expect and what to look for. And those buzzwords that they use on the news, they'll tell us really what they're going to do. If you'd only listen to the buzzwords, but you have to know how they think in order to be able to do that. And so read Syndrome of Control. That way you'll know the mindset, the thought patterns, the buzzwords, why they're doing what they're doing, and how that we must free ourselves from these powers that are controlling us and our family today.
All right, fine. Well, of course, this is a fascinating book because, of course, George Hanson was a very courageous congressman. He eventually was arrested and convicted on totally trumped-up charges. He was accused of not reporting things correctly as far as his election campaign, and he did exactly what he was told, what another 150 other congressmen did, but they only went after one congressman. They sent him to prison. They destroyed him financially. They destroyed his health. They tortured him. They plagued him for 10 years, and at the end of 10 years, they suddenly said, oh, shucks, we really didn't have that authority to send you to prison because this was not the federal government. I did not have the right to do what it did. Sorry, George, we'll let you out. By this time, he was a broken man. And, of course, this was a lesson to the other congressmen. Don't tell the American people the truth. Is Congressman Hanson still alive, do you know?
As far as I know, Congressman Hanson is still alive. He was so tortured and so destroyed, his family and his home was so destroyed until he basically said, I just can't take it anymore. As far as I know, he's still alive.
All right, fine. Well, if anybody out there does know, I would love to get him onto our programs. He was a very, very courageous man. He, in fact, even after he'd been indicted and convicted, he ran for Congress and he was almost elected. He was attacked by the Wall Street Journal, by the New York Times, by the entire establishment. They lied about him. They used a massive campaign to defeat him. Why? Because he was an honest congressman, and he told the truth. Could that really happen here in America? I still have the articles that the Wall Street Journal, the lies they wrote about him, I guess it was in the early 90s, when they charged him falsely, and eventually they said, oh, shucks, George, too bad. We really never should have sent you to prison. You really weren't guilty at all. But you see what a wonderful lesson that is for any member of Congress or any senator or a cabinet member or anybody else who really wants to tell the truth. And I've always thought, you know, thinking about that book that he dictated for Lindsay Williams, I wonder if that might have been one of the reasons why they went out to get him. Could that happen in America? Yes, it could, if we have evil people in key positions. And I would like to suggest that there is a Brotherhood of Darkness. There truly are secret organizations. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read it through three or four times or watch the video. I've had people call and tell me they've watched the video six or seven times and they learn something new each time. So the information is there. You need to get it. Then you need to help us get the truth out, because we truly are involved in an epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here with Lindsay Williams. Well, Lindsay, would you like to get that telephone number out one more time?
Yes, I would beg. Let me give you my books. I decided a number of months ago that what good are they going to do me in the warehouse if America's gone? So if you purchase one of the videotapes, with each videotape, a copy of the book comes free of charge, and the audio tape that I am putting in there that I prepared myself that will help you to understand how you can overcome it all is a gift, an hour and a half audio tape that will come in every package as a gift. All you need to do is, right now, the operator standing by, if you will dial 800-321-2900, the call is free of charge. Operators are standing by. You may use your credit card, and they'll be glad to let you order the videotapes and get a book free with each videotape. 800-321-2900. Any time the price of a gallon of gas is over $2 a gallon at the gas pump, the people who control the world make over $60 billion per year. And who are they? You'll find out in Syndrome of Control, but I'll try to put it in a nutshell. They are the people who control the World Bank, the ones who are controlling the third world countries, the ones who give out the loans so they can turn around and put them into jeopardy. Now, what else are they doing to you? Here's one more startling one that, oh my goodness, we've got so much tonight, you just must read the books, but at least I'll give you one more. Natural gas at Prudhoe Bay. Natural gas comes up with oil. When the oil comes up at the pressure of hundreds of pounds at Prudhoe Bay from down to the depth it does, natural gas naturally comes up with it. At Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, every 24 hours, 1 billion, now you did hear correctly, not million, 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas come up every 24 hours with the oil. And because there is no place to put it, and because the government of the United States of America will not allow another pipeline to be built down the same corridor, which would not in any way jeopardize the ecology of the state of Alaska, that natural gas is being pumped back into the ground, and they're using 48 747-type jet engines that have been adapted for the purpose of pumping that back into the ground, and are not allowing it to come through the American people while your electric bills are going up, and natural gas is the cleanest method of generating electricity on the face of the earth.
Lindsay, we're out of time. Lindsay, we're out of time, but God bless you. Thanks so very much for being with us again this evening.
Thank you, Doctor.
Good night. God bless. Back here, and Lindsay is always a fascinating guest. We always enjoy having him on, and I think it's so important we understand that we're being manipulated as far as this whole peak oil situation is concerned. I don't understand where oil came from. We do know that many of the oil fields which have been pumped out in years past suddenly begin filling up again. Where is the oil coming from? I'm not really certain, but I'll tell you one thing. There are no more dinosaurs that are breaking down and bringing the oil. So we're being lied to about the oil, Is there probably an infinite supply? Well, there may very well be, a time when there will be a shortage of oil, but everything is being done to block the development of alternative energy sources. Nuclear energy, the obvious thing to do, we're not allowed to do that. And why? Well, my goodness, we just don't know what to do with the spent fuel. Understand, we're being manipulated. You need to get our sustainable development syllabus. You need to get our sustainable development 4-tape set. You need to think about getting our sustainable development syllabus, sustainable development video, sustainable development, The Road to Tyranny is the title of it, and it will help you to begin to put together all of the things we're talking about. So you need to understand sustainable development. You need to understand population control. There is a population control agenda. In fact, in our sustainable development syllabus, we have a copy of my population control agenda monograph, which I think is probably the best thing that's out there at the present time to explain the real agenda behind population control, which is to eliminate the majority of the people in the world today. What's happening with Terry Schiavo is certainly a great tragedy. But imagine if it was hundreds of millions of people that they were systematically destroying because they feel there are too many people in the world. And they feel that they are using up the natural resources, and they feel that they have no right to live. And ladies and gentlemen, there are people with that mentality out there. You need to get our 4-tape set on population control. You need to get our 4-tape set on genocide. You need to get our 4-tape set on why do we still have cancer. You need to get our 4-tape set on euthanasia. You need to get our video on population control. And if you get any of those things, you would like a copy of the Population Control Agenda monograph, we'll be glad to send that to you. If you get almost any other item that we have, and just request the Population Control Agenda monograph, or, of course, it's up on the website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or you can certainly find it in our sustainable development syllabus. So we want you to get it. We want you to read it. We want you to check the documentation of what we say and try to prove us wrong. And if you can't, then you have an obligation to be involved. The last hour, we talked about what they're doing to our children. And as more and more children come down with this, Don Burton, who is one of the leaders of Congress, two of his grandchildren are autistic because they believe the doctor who told them you have to get these immunizations. They're using all the coercive mechanisms of government to force you to immunize your child to get the hepatitis B. There are more complications from hepatitis B vaccine than any other vaccine out there. You get molecular mimicking. You begin then to destroy the myelin sheath of your nerves and of your brain. And, of course, many of the people who've gotten this have complications. In fact, you triple your chance of getting MS if you take the hepatitis B vaccine. We have those studies. You triple the incidence in adults of getting MS if you take the hepatitis B vaccine. So go ahead and do what the doctor tells you or check the facts yourself. But remember, if these things happen to you and your family, nobody's responsible other than yourself. Determine the truth. Find out if we're telling you the truth. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.